Welcome back to Disruptive Adventism. Today, we have four fine gentlemen that are going to speak to us about their podcast. And of course, we're going to talk about the big topic that's everyone's mind. What constitutes being an Adventist, especially post-pandemic, right? There is a new addition of Adventists around the world. And what makes us Adventist? We have Sean Lendhoff, we have Eric Edstrom, we have Jesse Churchill and Anthony Leiter with us from the podcast, Seeking What They Sought. Thank you for coming, gentlemen. We're going to start with Sean, then Eric, then Jesse, and then Anthony. Just give us a couple things about, hey, who are you? What do you do? And what's the podcast about from your perspective?
Yeah, so my name is Sean Lendhoff. I'm a Bible and history teacher at a school, Adventist school, San Gabriel Academy. So I teach junior high, 6 through 8. I've had a colleague describe junior high as a daily catastrophe, which is a good way of describing what my job looks like, but it's a lot of fun. I love it. As for the podcast, we got started in 2018. And for us, at least from my perspective, we started it because we were already having these conversations. And we thought, why not record it? Why not dig a little bit deeper into these topics and see if anyone else is interested? And that's really the beginning of it.
And I'm Eric, and I'm a filmmaker in Southern California. Which isn't quite as cool as it sounds, but I just, I work for Loma Linda Health, and I make lots of video content for them. And I'm mostly here just to keep these guys from sounding awful, because they're all pretty technically challenged. That's kind of my main role.
Yeah, it's pretty true. I feel like Eric's whole role is just to make us sound good. He doesn't add anything to the podcast other than that. So, no, my name is Jesse. I'm a pastor in Western Washington and the Washington Conference. At one church, three quarter time, and then another one, quarter time. And I'm just part of the podcast. that's about it.
Well, hey, so my name's Anthony, and I work for the Southeastern California Conference. So, live in Southern California, but I'm actually away. Been away for the past year. They sent me to seminary, so I live here in Barron Springs, Michigan, studying at Andrews University, working on my MDiv, and but that's me. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, but I live in the great white Michigan North these days. Yeah, but I mean, just to, I guess, echo what everyone has said, we kind of started the podcast because we were kind of having these sorts of conversations. I remember there was like a span of a couple of weeks where Sean, Jesse, and I would like have these huge texting threads where we'd be talking about just random like theological stuff pertaining to Adventism. And then it evolved into phone calls because we're just like, oh, this is frustrating trying to text everything. And then we would have these like 3-hour phone calls. This was pre-Zoom, pre-pandemic. So we were having these joined phone calls, and we talked for like 3 hours, and we're like, let's just record this. So that's sort of my take.
No, and that's great. Every podcast is welcome in the platform, and especially those from Adventism. Adventism is quite a large denomination, spans multiple countries, but sometimes we can feel uniform. You know, it feels like we have certain things that go beyond, and that's a good thing. You know, if you go to an Adventist church in Australia or in Europe or in Africa, you know, whatever continent you're in, or if you're in America or South America, they all kind of have the same format, if you will. So Adventism can be uniform in certain areas, but in other areas, we are not so uniform, especially here in the United States. We have West Coast Adventist and East Coast Adventist and Michigan Conference, which is a very kind of different hybrid. I used to work there, so I can say it, you know. But then you have the South and you have everything in between. So what is an Adventist to you? What do you guys think? Anyone can go ahead.
It's a really good question. I feel like, to me, an Adventist is less of somebody who, this is going to sound weird, but I mean, it's like, I think the only uniting factor that we have is some key core beliefs. I think outside of that, it seems like it's kind of whatever your culture is, whatever your background is, your cultural upbringing, it's going to be completely different. So I guess just to start out, that thought. I think it's really uniting around a couple of things, or at least two or three things by any means. Because if you go to Southeastern California Conference, where Anthony's from, so Anthony, I'm going to speak for you because that's what I love doing. Down there, it's just like a bunch of liberals who, you know, they just sit on the beach all day.
You can call us heretics. That's okay.
Yeah. Heretics. You just have like blonde hair. You go surfing all day.
Blonde hair is the number one way people would describe me.
Exactly. Anthony is very African-American. But you have that and the more liberal expression of it all, where maybe your beliefs in Sabbath is real like loose, and your belief in State of the Dead or a lot of other things, it's kind of loose comparatively to someplace else where it's a lot more strict. So I feel like even those core beliefs that we're united around, it's not really that uniform.
I think in some ways the Adventist Church has been through an identity crisis, and we've gone through different waves throughout history. So to pick a unifying measure, I mean, the easy place to start is our name, right? So you could probably say most Adventists think Sabbath matters. But what that means on a certain level varies by group, right? What is, you know, it's for some, it's just a lifestyle thing. For others, it's an identifying mark of the remnant church as portrayed in Revelation. That's a very different spectrum. But it still means Sabbath matters to some degree or another, right? So let's, you know, you can start there. Sabbath matters. And the second coming is happening. I mean, that's
those two specific things.
Look, Seventh-day Adventist. So you've got the Advent and you've got the Sabbath. You've got those two things as part. So if you're going to really be just straightforward, that's like that's the bare minimum for like, just even, I hate the word qualify. Like, it's just like, that's, if you don't believe in those two things, I don't know why you'd go to the trouble of being Adventist. You can argue remnant and what that means. Is it a church? Is it a message? You can argue signs of the times. You can argue the place of Ellen White. You can do all those things within the confines of Adventism or even investigative judgment. But to flat out disagree with Sabbath mattering on some degree and the second coming being what we're all looking forward to as what Jesus pointed towards in his ministry here on earth, I think you struggle to stay Adventist.
Absolutely. And I agree with that because it allows us to see that there are some core identifiers, right? Like, you know, as you're trying to portray, one of them is the Sabbath, another one is the second coming. Those are in the name. But then there's these other peripheral issues, you know, about salvation and about different things that come around, more cultural, if you will. And those can be a little bit flexible in certain areas and not so flexible in other areas. But I think the issue arises when we become, and this happens often in our Adventist congregations, it's that we become religious police. It's like the Pharisees, right? Like, you know, there is a core group, a certain area of the church, let it be in a local level or even at institutional levels, that try to keep, hey, this is the bar. And then that bar can be moved, but it's according to whatever those individuals want. I mean, I see it as a pastor from time to time where certain churches believe that they have the power to legislate or to cast out people from the church because of their sins. You know, and I have to remind them that, no, it's Jesus, whoever separates, right? Jesus separates. We're just supposed to bring people to the church. He's the one that sorts things out. So what are your thoughts on Adventism being that, quote unquote, religious police and our tendencies towards that Pharisaic practice?
Yeah, for sure. So I tend to concur with what Sean had mentioned. I think Adventism is certainly, and I would say probably currently, even now, in the middle of an identity crisis of what it actually means to be Adventist. And I think depending on where you go and who you talk to, you'll get different definitions. This is something that Jesse kind of alluded to. You know, Adventists in South America would probably say something different than Adventists in Long Beach, California. about what it means to be an Adventist. And so I think that sort of overarching meta sort of conflict is sort of reflected at the local church level, in the sense that lots of different people have lots of different ideas about, you know, about really core things like the gospel, like what is the gospel? And so they're kind of operating out of different understandings of that. And that kind of plays out in the sense, kind of like you mentioned, like we end up in some places, certain places, you have churches where people kind of operate as kind of the religious police, in a sense, sort of dictating what is Adventist, what is not Adventist, what is Christian and what is not Christian. And so I don't know that I actually have an answer for it, but I definitely agree that it happens. And I think it's kind of due to that sort of identity crisis going on.
I feel like within Adventism, there's also some level of, you said it, Anthony, identity crisis, just like what exactly are we? And to try and even begin to define what is Adventist, as soon as you said it, I was like, wow, that's a very interesting problem, because there's a group, I think it's probably more on the conservative end, that strongly believes that to be Adventist, it's very boxy. It's like, here's your limits, in essence. And once you stray outside these limits, you're not Adventist anymore. But then there's a whole far more liberal, and I don't mean to use that in any sort of negative or positive way, just liberal side, that it's like, oh no, like the boundaries are real gray. And what I find interesting about either side is like, well, if it's just these strict lines, that's kind of a problem because we're so varied across the board in the world. But if there's no sort of defining characteristics, then that's equally problematic. I mean, Anthony, we've talked that sometimes, like you knew people down in Southern California who it's like, is Jesus even real? You know, and like they're like people in the church, you know, and it's like, whoa, that's weird. So it's like, can you be Adventist if you don't believe that Jesus actually rose from the dead? But then on the other hand, it's like Ellen White is pretty much up there with the Bible in some people's regard. So it's a very, like, yeah, I guess it's even a question that I think we kind of have to sit with and just be like, yeah, what does it actually mean to be Adventist?
I think it's challenging when one of our kind of core identities as Adventists is that we have the truth, you could say. I don't know, I think most Adventists would agree, like, we have, I mean, if you're Adventist, it should probably be because you think Adventism has the most truth out of any religion, I guess, or denomination to be more accurate. And so it's, I think there's a real tendency for us to not look down on other denominations, but, you know, kind of take place ourselves a little higher because we feel like we understand the Bible better than they do. And I think maybe we know in our hearts, like we're not better Christians than them necessarily, but it's something that we kind of subconsciously do as we kind of put ourselves above other denominations.
You know, to that point, one thing that comes to mind is my recent activity on a subreddit. So for those of you listening, you know, Reddit, you probably heard it in the news because of Wall Street Bets and all of the stuff with GameStop. But there are more communities. There are more communities in Adventism and ex-Adventism and Christianity, philosophy, you name it, there is a subreddit for that. You know, so I was perusing around the ex-Adventist subreddit, and I was reading stories, a lot of stories of what I would term as religious abuse. You know, people feeling that their religious experience was robbed out of them because Adventists came to them and told them how to live or what to do when they may not have been ready to make those changes. Or people who, after years of being in our church, want to leave because they have never felt joy. So the question that I want to turn into, because you guys are speaking into, hey, we have a crisis. Okay, we have a crisis. And within that crisis, we have different groups of Adventists. So the question that comes to mind is like, how do we find joy in Adventism? You know, that's the term, because if Adventism is for some a very rigid line, and for others a non-existent line, is there joy in there, and is it drawing you closer to Jesus? I mean, at the end of the day, that's the matter. So how have you, maybe personally, or what do you think is necessary for Adventists to find joy in their religious practice?
I think even alongside with that, the place where, as you mentioned that, Jose, that my mind goes is even further, even a deeper question that leads to that one, which is, you know, what is your reason for being Adventist? And that's another one that goes with that, because that kind of goes with the joy part, right? You know, what brought you there and what keeps you there? And those might be two very different things. For some, it's just growing up in it. You know, you always hear about the fourth or fifth generation Adventist. For others, they're new converts. And there's a story behind that. But to your point of what brings joy, for me at least, the holistic message that comes with Adventism is what, in a way, makes this question almost impossible to answer. Now, I say that because what brings joy for people could be so different. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. I think there truly is something that Adventism does offer to so many different people wherever they're at. So if there's something that they're struggling with, I do believe that the framework that Adventism brings when it comes to looking at the Bible, looking at Scripture, and just for myself, also through Ellen White, I think it does bring a clear picture of an abundant life, and it also paints a picture of hope for the life to come. And for me, that's something that is more complete and more tangible in Adventism than I've seen in other faith systems, both in and outside Christianity.
I think, I don't know, when you talk about finding joy, I feel like I found more joy in Adventism through people from other denominations, actually, weirdly enough. Like, I think I learned how to read the Bible in a far more holistic way from a bunch of Reformed Calvinists. You know, we were like some pastors that I knew, and they were, you know, the way they read the Bible was just, of course, I would disagree with some of the conclusions they come to, but holistically, it's something I never learned in Adventism. But then, and then I learned more about how to love people and how to mentor and how to just have joy in Christ from a Pentecostal pastor who their church rented from ours, and he's kind of become a mentor of mine. And I think some people in Adventism might think that I'm a heretic for even saying these things, but I learned those things. But what was interesting is that tied with some pretty core doctrinal things that we have, such as, I think, for instance, State of the Dead, that when we talk about State of the Dead, meaning that we don't believe in hell, we're annihilationists, meaning that we believe God destroys evil and evil people in the end, but doesn't burn them forever. That idea, I think, that ties me more to Adventism, I think, in a way that allows me to see character of God in a far better way than I've seen outside of Adventism. Sabbath, I think, has been so abused. And weirdly enough, I think I learned Sabbath better from people outside of Adventism too. The guys on the Bible Project, if you ever listen to their stuff, their videos or their podcasts, incredible stuff. And they have a far more holistic view. And I would listen to even some people who would worship on Sunday, but they would talk about Sabbath, and it sounded so much better than what I grew up with. And so weirdly enough, I think being in Adventism gave me all the framework to hear that stuff, but I never heard it within Adventism. I heard it from other places, and then it came and was added to my already Adventism. And I found a lot more joy from already, I didn't have to do a lot of big leaps to get to those better conclusions. So that being said, I think it's a weird answer, but I think I found joy in Adventism through learning from other people a more holistic Christianity that was then tied into maybe kind of the core knowledge base that I had gained from Adventism. So
that is definitely a different answer than, you know, anyone was expecting, probably. And the listeners are like, because sometimes we box in people, you know, we like to box in people and say, like, well, pastors are supposed to behave in this and build in that way and say these things, right? But sometimes we find joy in other people's, you know, just idea. Somebody else wants to react to that, or to react to the question on joy. If that's the case, go ahead right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's an interesting question, Jose, for you to ask. I think simply because, if I'm totally honest and frank, like, this is a question I've been thinking about for maybe the past few years, and it's a question I don't know that I've even answered, really. I think I'm kind of in the process of trying to figure it out. And I'm saying this as a pastor as well. I think I'm getting closer, but I think for a while there, like the past four or five years definitely had me kind of asking a lot of these questions myself. Like, why am I an Adventist? What does it mean to be an Adventist? Is my job to make other Christians Adventist? A lot of these kind of identity-based questions.
Do you think the reason why you're getting all of those questions is because of the cold of Michigan?
I think the snow and the ice definitely is the reason why I'm enlightened now. I think maybe to synthesize, to answer your question, I think I resonate with what Sean and Jesse have said. A lot of what Jesse said as well. I think, I grew up with kind of the classic Adventist framework. I'm a pastor's kid, grew up in a conservative home. And I think because of that, I kind of had the system already, but the language that was used was always, the language is so often kind of what you're saying, boxy and maybe a little bit abusive, and, or maybe spiritually unhealthy. And, but I think in the past few years, being able, as just it said, to kind of go outside of the box, outside of the family, have conversations with people from other perspectives, learn from resources like the Bible Project or different authors like Timothy Keller, John Mark Comer. They both write really, really great stuff on Sabbath, has been really redemptive. And being able to take their language and apply it to my Adventism was really life-giving. And then I think being here at the seminary in the past just like year and a half has also been huge for me, just sort of uncovering like some key, like deep intrinsically theological Adventist things, like, you know, just kind of like on digging deeper into what Sabbath is and what it means and what it meant to the Jewish writers, and as well as, you know, our perspective on history and time, and how we have what's called a historicist view of history, and the idea that God actually dwells within the timeline and he interacts with us not from outside of time but within time, and also the idea of the cosmic conflict, like this concept that there's a war between good and evil happening, and that God's concern is that his rule doesn't happen by force or coercion, but rather by redemptive self-sacrificial love. And so even in the end, God draws people to himself with redemptive self-sacrificial love. So I think these ideas are so, these kind of like theological ideas have kind of redeemed and helped create joy in my own Adventism.
And if I could just tag on to that, I think one of the things that I'm excited about is that there seems to be a generation of pastors and leaders that are coming that are just, in essence, not just starting. There's already been a lot of really good people, but I feel like there's a larger number coming that are healthier in their Christianity, that are at least healthier in their theology or their willingness to, or how they might preach it or talk about it. Because I feel like one of the big problems that Adventism has had for so long, and this is, and I'm talking about joy here, because I think it sucked the joy out of Adventism when it was just so rules-based. It was so like the character of God was something we always talked about. That's the cosmic conflict, is like, it's about this character of God and redeeming that. But then like the character of God that we were showing through our lived out Christianity was just so damaging. And I think that all four of us, at least I can speak for us, I don't know about you, Jose, but we experienced Christianity Adventism in a way that still had a lot of that baggage from a while ago. Whereas I think, and I'm hoping that within the next decade or so, there might be kids growing up who never experienced that kind of Adventism. And it's a completely new, hopefully healthier version of it. And so that gives me some level of joy that there's like, there is hope. We aren't just going to be living in the pain of the wrong things we learned, you know, back when our generation was kids, we're all in our 20s. You know, hopefully there's generations that will come up who will never have to experience that.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it's quite important, especially for pastors, to create healthy communities where people can come and learn and not just be told what to do and what not to do, but to learn by themselves, you know, spend some time, learn about the Holy Spirit and how he is going to guide them instead of adhering to certain rules. And to that, you know, I also want to say that it's not like Adventism is terrible, right? Like, you know, Adventism is beautiful. I mean, I'm an Adventist still because I love this church, but not every church in Adventism is healthy. Some churches are a little bit toxic. And, you know, you have to recognize that. We have to recognize that. And I think the pandemic has afforded a lot of people to not being in those toxic environments that detriment their, you know, walk with Christ. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are not going back to church per se, like going back to the building. Well, except in certain areas where you cannot go because it's limitations and whatnot. I'm mainly speaking here in the South where everything is open and it's like Corona who, what, you know, never happened. Right. You know, but some people are not coming back, not because they don't want to come back, but because they recognize that if they come back, maybe their Christian experience is going to be kind of taken down instead of uplifting because of the environment that they may be set or walking back into. And to that, I turn to a very kind of controversial topic, because I think a lot of this comes from misinterpretation from Ellen White. You know, we use Ellen White and we believe in Ellen White that she was a prophetess, or, well, you know, at least I do. I don't know your perspectives, personal perspectives, but at least she was a good writer, a very inspired person. And, you know, we believe that she got something from God and is communicating it to the people. But as with the Bible, a lot of her writings have been distorted and have a specific theological agenda for many people in the world. They use her to quote or to correct the Bible, at least in each individual's perspective. So maybe I kind of like, as we start closing, you know, the podcast and going to the final section, is Ellen White necessary for Adventism? And if so, how?
We have a whole podcast episode on this. Actually, that was the exact question we asked, is like, can I be Adventist and not believe in Ellen White, as a faultless prophet, you know, sort of thing. And we, I think we all came out on different perspectives on that. I don't exactly remember. It was a while ago.
We've changed a lot it's been like 3 years. So to be fair, or like 2 years at least.
I don't know how much I've changed at least. I think that podcast episode that we recorded was especially helpful for me because, being able to process through it was good. And I think where I came out on Ellen White is whether she's a prophet or not, believing in her should never be. And I think it's even in our stated beliefs, like that she's not a test for membership in essence.
Well, it is technically. There are actually two statement of beliefs in our Seventh-day Adventist Church. We have the long 13 version item, which I never recommend that you use, not because it's theologically incorrect, but just because it's long. You know,
is that the baptism one or is that the 27?
The baptism. I'm talking about the baptism statements, right? Like, you know, we have a 13 baptism points that, you know, go, and they're pretty long, each and every one of them. It just gets tedious when you're trying to get somebody under the water and get them into, you know, accepting Jesus. It can get a little bit tedious, trust me. But there is a 3.1, which is like a little bit shorter, super way shorter, you know, it's 3 instead of 13 points. But actually, in our 28 fundamental beliefs, we express that we believe in the spirit of prophecy as manifested in the life of Ellen White. And in our baptism, we also use that. Now, the question is, are we correct in doing that? You know, and because we do believe in the spirit of prophecy, we do believe in the continuation of the Holy Spirit, but is she a test of fellowship when she herself said that she shouldn't be, even though it's on our documents, you know?
No, I think I could firmly say no, she shouldn't be a test of membership. If the stories in encapsulated in scripture aren't good enough or aren't enough for us to come to a holistic understanding of God, then that would cause some questions for me. But I think the problem with Ellen White is that she is human, and we even see her progress in her understanding of God and all that stuff. And so it's like, it's even, what Ellen White do you believe in? Do you believe in the early? Do you believe in the later? What year are you saying this is the cutoff point for her writings or for my understanding of her? And I think any sort of elevating of her past something beyond an author who had some really insightful things to say about God is dangerous. And so that's all. I mean, I'm definitely nuanced in my understanding, but yeah.
I was going to say, I think I've heard it echoed by George Knight and others kind of similar in that vein, where you aren't required to accept Ellen White's teachings to be an Adventist, but you have to accept that the church believes it. The church believes in Ellen White. And with the baptismal vows, I don't know, you know, it's not a requirement to use those vows. At least my understanding is when I baptized someone, it was not with those 13 originals. I used a different version. It was something else. So again, I don't know if it's a requirement. It may be in some circles a taboo thing not to use those original 13, but in the 28 fundamentals, which Jesse, you said 27, so get up to date. But in the
it called out,
yeah, no problem.
I just screwed that up.
You're not Adventist. That was the test.
You're not even a pastor.
No, I know. But even in the 28, like it's recognizing the spirit of prophecy, but it never mentions Ellen White's name in the 28, does it? Does it mention her name?
Where does it?
Because last time I remember it saying spirit of prophecy, but does it recognize her as like a, how does it say it? What's the wording?
So I don't have the exact wording with me right now, but okay. So there are different documents of the 28 fundamental beliefs, and we can search them on Google as we start talking about all of this, but there is a concise version, right? That only has pretty much a little explanation in all of the texts that go under that. And then there's an expanded version, you know, the one with the book, the one that says 28, what Adventists believe, 28 fundamental beliefs. And in that, she is mentioned and very explicitly mentioned. Now, it's not saying that they're equal, right? Like, you know, the spirit of prophecy is not equal to Ellen White, which I think a lot of Adventists believe, even though the rhetoric is not like that, because when we say the writings of Ellen White, we usually say, oh, in the spirit of prophecy, it says like that, or in the spirit of prophecy, you know, we equate her to being the spirit of prophecy, which is incorrect. And a lot of pastors have gotten over to just continue that same thing over and over again, when it's honestly, I mean, to a certain degree, it's just saying she's the Holy Spirit, and that's incorrect and heretical to a degree, you know? But I'm not saying that she was not influenced by the Holy Spirit. As Adventists, we believe that. But it, you know, we definitely need to revise certain wordings. Our wording is the thing where a lot of people get hung up. We're not going to get hung up here in the podcast. But yeah, you know, you used a different baptism statements, which is a good thing. It's a good thing as well. But, you know, continue as we were talking.
I mean, I clearly only read the TLDR version of the 28 Fundamentals. I clearly didn't.
It says it like Jose. I just looked it up. The gift is an identifying mark of the remnant church, and we believe it was manifested in the ministry of Ellen G.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it literally says
the idea is the church believes it. The church believes it, but it doesn't say you as a Seventh-day Adventist need to agree. You know, and you can interpret that however you want, I guess, but at least my understanding is you don't have to do that. Now, even on another level is the idea that we baptize and you also have church membership that goes all in one package. And so that also makes it tough with figuring out how you set the bar for baptism. And so, you know, we talked to Doug Batchelor and we talked about some interesting things about, is there a certain barrier to baptism? And so again, that's another one that is interesting. People disagree on what that level should be.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not one of the pastors here, so I'm not sure what the church's official stance is. I'm sure that it's a little bit muddy and depends where you ask or who you ask. But to me, I think it's pretty pivotal that Ellen White isn't a requirement to be Adventist, believing in Ellen White and her prophetic gift, because if we claim that we stand alone on the Bible, and that's what it all boils down to, is everything is tested by the Bible and not by Ellen White, then I think it's crucial that we keep them separated. Not trying to diminish Ellen White, but you know, she isn't the Bible, and we claim that, and so we need to live that out too.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And you know, it's part of this whole perspective, right? Like, you know, how to respect that she was a founding member of Seventh-day Adventism, but how to recognize that she was not infallible, like the prophets even were not infallible. You know, even the prophets had their fallings and God rebuked them, you know, for that. And it is written by them at the same time. I mean, just a cursory reading of Ellen White will yield that she had to learn a lot of things. And a lot of people don't like to talk about that because they like to think of a holy person, right? Like, you know, it's kind of like our canonization process, our saints per se, right? Ellen White, Joseph Bates, James White, Uriah Smith, you know, you name it.
Desmond Ford.
That's right, Desmond Ford.
Sean, you're going off on a different branch of Adventism.
I know. I couldn't help myself. I'm sorry, Jose.
It's fine.
This is your podcast. I should not be interrupting you.
may he rest in peace. You know, he passed, unfortunately. But, you know, there is a lot of controversies that have gone over in Adventism over the years. And as we go in a post-pandemic Adventism, maybe my final question to all of you is, what do you see post-pandemic? How's Adventism going to turn after this crisis?
Jose, you sucked me into that Ellen White question, and I'm definitely the most heretical of the four of us. And now I feel like you're leaving me out in the middle of the ocean, and my mind is swirling with my heretical thoughts, and I don't know what to do with them. So if I can I hit that question before we move on?
No.
This is why I love Eric. I'm definitely, it's so funny because as you guys were all talking, I was just recognizing how much of a heretic I am. Like the more Sean said, the more I realized that I'm a heretic, because number one, I don't even know that I've ever used those 13 statements in a baptism before. I don't even think I knew where to find them.
Are you even Adventist though?
They're in the church manual. Did you get one of those when you became a pastor?
Somewhere along the way, I have one. I think it's in my library somewhere.
Anthony's not the kind of guy that reads manuals. Just say that.
Eric knows me well.
This circles back to the first question. Like, how do you define what Adventist is? Are you even Adventist, Anthony? That's the question.
Yeah, I think, well, and that's where I think, you know, that really circles back to Jose's question. Like, because I definitely don't think believing Ellen White was an infallible prophet is a marker of Adventist identity, for sure. I think, but my view is definitely colored by my view of what it means to be a prophet. And I think when you look biblically, what it means for God to give prophetic gifts, I think, Jose, what you said was really poignant about how we tend to project onto people like Ellen White. Well, I guess Ellen White in Adventism, we project onto her this sort of sainthood. Ironically, the very thing that we try and escape, I guess, from, or that we kind of, our collective Adventist consciousness tries to escape from Catholicism, we kind of project this kind of sainthood, this infallibility onto her. When in reality, I think, as Jesse kind of mentioned, I tend to view her just as a very human. And in the same way that Abraham and Moses and Jonah and Jeremiah were all human. And, you know, like, Jonah got a prophecy wrong. He said Nineveh would be destroyed, and then God changed his mind. So there's all sorts of things. That's a whole theological conundrum we could go into another time. But
just opening up the cans of worms over here, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, so I tend to think, like, prophets can get prophecies incorrect. Prophets can be wrong. Prophets can say things out of their own wanting to be liked. Prophets can be human, you know. So that's kind of my view of Ellen White, even though I still retain and believe that I think she had a very real and true prophetic gift. The Holy Spirit used her in a real way. But I just think prophets are human, and I think Ellen White is no exception. And so because of that, I tend to think, I just think the gospel is so core to Christianity. If we don't know what it means that Jesus rose from the dead and destroyed sin and ushered us into a new relationship with God that isn't defined by production and how much we can impress him, but rather family, that we're accepted and loved by him unconditionally, then I think we've just missed the whole point of Christianity. And if we don't even know what Christianity is, which is something I hear so often from my Adventist friends who are on the margins or who have left the church, a key line that I've heard from a few friends is, you know, I feel like I grew up and I became a good Adventist, but I feel disconnected from my Christianity. I don't know even know what it means to be a Christian. I know how to keep the Sabbath and how not to eat bacon and whatever. but I don't know what it means to even be a Christian. And I think if we've missed that, if we've missed like the core Orthodox Christianity in the pursuit of other things, then it's just, it means nothing. Like as Paul says, like if Jesus wasn't raised from the dead, then everything we're saying is meaningless. So I think that's kind of how I view my Adventism through that lens. Okay, we can go back to the question you were wanting
to talk absolutely. About. And I mean, by that last statement, of course, you know, Eric being here, he's going to talk, this is the commercial time now for striplings instead of bacon. You mentioned bacon, you know, we had to mention the striplings. I don't even know, are striplings from Loma Linda or they're from Morningstar?
Morningstar.
Are not Morningstar. Wait, are striples and striplings two different things?
No, they're all striples.
I think they're Worthington. They're Worthington.
Yeah, they're Worthington, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Let's talk about...
My wife has gotten Morningstar stripples.
Okay. So let's talk about then the Loma Linda fried chick. There you go. That's super.
There you go.
Super.
Good plug.
You know, there you go. The best plug for Loma Linda.
Or the Loma Linda decanter.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, Sean. Don't go there.
Anyways, so as our final question, you know, and then we're just going to continue maybe just speaking about different things. So at the end of the day, what do you see in post-pandemic Adventism?
I'm going to jump in first. I got to run soon, but I'm optimistic, but maybe in a really naive way. I was not optimistic when we started our podcast in 2018, right after this annual council stuff in 2018, kind of after a few years after the 2015 GC, just a lot of division.
Women's ordination.
Yeah, women's ordination.
Yeah.
But there's other pieces too. And I'm at a more optimistic place than I was then. I'm not naive to the point that I think that there's no division, to the point that we could see serious issues with, I don't know, with actual church split being a possibility sometime down the road. I am less in that place now than I was 2 years ago. So I'm optimistic that we'll find a way after something like this to come together and realize there's bigger things than some of the nitty gritty. And I'm not saying that to say that women's ordination isn't something we should talk about. We should talk about it. We should find a way to move forward, but there's also a greater purpose, I think, for our church. And like Anthony said, if we can't get Orthodox Christianity in line with our mission, then we're missing something. Now, I personally believe that core Adventist doctrine is core Christian doctrine, and it's been clarified beyond standard Christianity. That's why I'm an Adventist. I think it's the purest sense of what God's message to us was through his scripture. But living that out is a different thing. Living it practically is a different thing, and we've struggled with that for over 150 years. So I'm optimistic that we will find a way to work together, and there's going to be division. There might be difficult times, but I do believe we'll find a way. And I'm the reason I think I'm more optimistic now than I was back then was because I think more people are talking and listening. And I, at least for myself, and maybe it's because I'm in the Adventist podcast world where everyone's talking about these things, we're having these discussions, but I do feel like in the local church level and in the school I'm at with students, people are asking more questions. They're doing more critical thinking. And although there are concerning trends of, you know, using social media to create division, at least in person, and when it comes to building relationships, I'm hopeful that when we especially go back more into in person after the fallout of COVID, getting back to normal, I do believe that there will be more authentic conversation happening in church. And so I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that we'll find a way to set aside some differences and actually have decent conversations that lead to good places. For me, I feel like Adventism, at least in many ways, was superficial for me growing up in many, many different ways when it came to some of the issues and what it meant to be Adventist. Like we said at the beginning, what it meant to define Adventism. It was very superficial for me for a long time, and I know for many it was. I think we're moving past that, hopefully, as a denomination, and seeing what at the heart of our church really matters. And I think, Jose, what you're doing by asking that question and what we've talked about today shows that. We're talking about this more. And so that's key to moving forward.
I tend to I tend to be more cynical, I think, and skeptical by nature. And so I feel as if I kind of have like a both and perspective. I tend to definitely agree with Sean in that it seems like lots of conversations are happening. You know, I think especially amongst younger folks, but even in the older folks, I think just having conversations around church in the local church communities that I'm involved in, just seeing that kind of increase, I think has been really cool. And so I think there seems to be a spirit, and I would say especially among younger Adventists, that we just want to actually have the conversations and talk about things, and we're okay disagreeing and just having healthy conversations. All of that said, I do tend to be a little cynical. I think the identity crisis that the church is in is probably, I think we're headed for maybe even a more intense back and forth between the different kind of sides vying for identity. And I think, you know, for those who don't know, we just saw the United Methodist denomination go through a huge split, like in March? It was like a month ago.
The irony of a United, something in the name with United splitting is just insane.
It's so true. And the reason for their split was because of the more liberal branch deciding to ordain LGBTQ plus ministers. And, you know, we haven't even figured out the women's ordination question. We're not even close to the LGBTQ question. So I tend to be pretty cynical when it comes to, because I just think from a top-down perspective, I think this isn't a shot, or this isn't a, you know, ad hominem attack on anyone personally, but I think from a world church perspective, I just haven't really seen evidence that like those at the very top are really interested in actually listening and hearing and having conversation to others, really, in general. I think we're headed for, I'm trying to say this.
This isn't directed at anyone specifically, but our GC leaders.
This isn't directed at anyone specifically, but you, Ted Wilson, specifically, no. But I'm not really ashamed or afraid to say that, because I think it's common knowledge, and it's not a personal attack, but I just think there just isn't really, it's on both sides, of course. Like, it's hard to hear each other. It's hard to listen. It's hard to have conversations where we remember, hey, I love you. Like, the gospel is the most important thing. But I think, the conflict is definitely gonna heat up again. And I'm not sure where it's going. So I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think our church has lots of problems, just like any other church. And we like to talk about those problems and try to solve them, I suppose. We'll probably always be doing that. But I mean, I think I speak for all of us when we say we do love Adventism. You know, it's kind of our home. And I've gotten to travel more than a lot of people in my life so far. And there's something special about being Adventist when you travel around the world and there's like Adventist church, you go on Sabbath, and it's like, people are so excited when you're Adventist, and where it's like this worldwide
casserole club, recipes all the same.
Yeah. Yeah. The potluck's always mediocre. That's not true. But, there is something really special about how kind of tight knit Adventism is. And I think that kind of lends itself to a lot of friction, because we're kind of so tight that, you know, there's a tendency for us to be like, we all need to agree on everything, and you need to see it my way. But I think if we can move forward with that family/club, feeling that you really get within Adventism, but also bring in more open communication and discussion about our spirituality and our beliefs, I think that will set us up well for the future.
I think I'm excited about the grassroots part of Adventism, the young people, the people who are maybe not young anymore, but they've had a healthier view of Adventism, or just God in general, for a long time. I'm excited about that. The the churches that are teaching things that are good, that are trying to foster some sort of like healthy community, as opposed to just staying in some harmful ways of looking at God, whether that's conservative or liberal. I mean, there's, you go too far on either side, that's, it is broken. But I'm excited for those people who are in the middle, who are just seeking Jesus and trying to create cultures within their local community to do that. I think, Anthony, I agree with you probably in the sense of hopefulness and cynicism, because I think that a lot of that will happen despite our leadership structure. And if you listen to our podcast, you're listening to us now, like, we sound really critical sometimes. And it's kind of like you're part of a family. You're from the inside, you see the stuff, you know, and you just want to call it out. And I think that's where we're coming from. And that's why I say, like, I think our administrative structure, not just GC, but all the way down, there's so many levels, there's so much money going all these different directions, that I think the grassroots are really exciting, but a lot of the stuff that's happening above that isn't really moving, at least in America, isn't moving Adventism very far forward. Maybe across the world it is, which is really cool. But at least in America, I think that's kind of the problem. But I think to say some last hopeful words is to say that I'm really excited about this generation that's coming, because there's going to be a whole new perspective on God that's going to become, I hope, normative within Adventism. That's exciting. So
I agree, and I hope so too. Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming to the podcast. I really appreciate having you guys. And for the listeners, make sure to check Jesse's, Anthony, Eric's, and Sean's podcast, Seeking What They Sought. It's going to be in the links below, and wherever you get your podcast, let it be an Apple or Android, whatever it is, just make sure to seek for Seeking What They Sought. So thank you very much for listening. And as always, we remind you to be disruptive.